So Mr. Smith was sitting at home like he often did in the evening. He'd sit by the fire and he might read or watch TV or just sit and get lost in his thoughts. And many of his nights had been like that for a very long time. So he was really surprised on this one cold evening while he was sitting by the fire that a knock came to the door. And so as he opened the door, there stood his pastor. And his pastor, he of course invited in and offered some tea and they sat by the fire. The pastor hardly, besides hello, said a word. And so they sat there for a very, very long time, and Mr. Smith was starting to get a little bit uncomfortable. Like, what is going on here? Why isn't he saying why he's here or saying anything? But yet, at the same time, he didn't really want to break the silence, so they just sat there looking at the fire for a very long time. Finally, the pastor got up, and he took one of the what had been an ember, one of the coals that had gotten cold that was separated out, and he put it back in the fire in the pile, and he sat back down and watched as the whole fire reignited, and the one ember, of course, collected nice, beautiful orange flames. And they sat there again in silence for a little bit. And then it sort of dawned on Mr. Smith, and so as the pastor got up to leave, Mr. Smith got tears in his eyes. And he said, "Pastor, thank you for the fiery sermon. I'll be back on Sunday." So we are more together than alone. We know this, right? We know this. This is the name of our series. It's also the name of the book we're using for our fall study by Mark Nepo, More Together Than Alone. And as much as we might want to rail against that or try to separate ourselves out, we need each other. We are wired to be in community. And so that is a reminder once again over and over for us that there are places that we are encouraged by, that we are supported by, that we are inspired by, that we really need and we forget about for whatever reasons, and stray from, and then we go back to, right? Over the years, I've met a lot of Unity people, and I've been surprised when I've been out, it happened at my other ministry, not here, where I would hear people that I'd seen once, you know, years before, and they'd say, "Oh yeah, Unity's my home, Unity's my spiritual church," and I'd be like, "Wow, really? That's cool." So I think that's really wonderful that even though it may not be a place people come, like somebody may come every Sunday, they identify it as one of these places that is a center of light for them. You know, fire for a long time was a place that people gathered, right? So it's in our bones too, that in our DNA, that when we see fire, kind of like a bonfire, we all come together and circle around it. It's a place where there is song and there is dance and there is ritual and there is conversation. It's the center, essentially, of the village or of the tribe. And so even today, we have that kind of draw. But over time, there's been buildings and there's been population explosions and roads and infrastructure. And so the center gets a little harder to find. For a while, it was the town square. So everybody would gather and you would know that there was a town square in every town, and often that was flanked or there was a cornerstone there in somewhere in the town square that was the church, right, which was also a center, a gathering place. And so over time we've just gotten so much bigger and so much more expansive that it's sometimes hard to locate these places. It's hard to locate where is the heartbeat of this town or this place. Where is the place of gathering? Where can I meet community? Where can I be in a place of sharing and song and dance and connection? Anybody experience that? When you go to a new town, it's not real obvious, right? Just go to the fire in the middle of town, or go to the town square, or go to the church, you know? It's not always that case. And so these centers of light, though, are more and more important for us to find where they are for us, to identify where is your center of light or centers of light. And hopefully this is one of them for many of us here. And I've heard many of you say, you know, when I pull in some different versions of the story, when I pull into Unity, when I get out of my car, I have that moment of breath, you know, like, ah, yeah, I'm home. This is my spot. This is a place of safety and support and encouragement and light. And so it's those kinds of places, places like ours, that offer that kind of beacon, that offer that kind of centering and groundedness. But I think it's really important for us to know where ours are, to name them and to claim them. So I really encourage you to spend some time this week maybe considering where your centers of light are. They may be the places like ours. They may be other spiritual community that is meaningful to you, or other kinds of gathering places that are really meaningful to you. Maybe it's a place where you go and make art, or maybe you have a group of friends that meet at one particular place and do some kind of book study, or, you know, you may have those places. So identifying them and then kind of thinking about how important they are to you is a part of how we then nurture and keep the light shining brightly in these places. Because it's also what it's what we bring and how we are filled, and also what we give and how we shine out together. That is an important piece of these, like, stars all around the planet, these centers of light. So sometimes it will be a place that is brick and mortar. And sometimes in our worldwide web network, it will be a virtual place even that you might identify as a place, a community that you go to, a touchstone, or a place that you find community in. One of those places might be something like Silent Unity. Anybody familiar with Silent Unity? Yeah, good, most of you are. And for those of you who aren't, Silent Unity is our prayer ministry. It's the largest international prayer ministry in the world. It's located at Unity Village, which is where our headquarters is, just outside Kansas City. And its tagline is the light that shines for you. So it's the light that is always shining for us as prayer, that is available to any of us 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. So we have this prayer partner that we can just call anytime, and a person on the other end of the line will pray with us about anything that's on our hearts or minds. Or we can email, or we can use the app. There's all kinds of ways to make connection with the center of light. Physically, that cupola, that space that is known as Silent Unity, is the building, of course, where all the workers are when you call. And it's also right underneath that light, much like our cupola here, there's a prayer vigil chapel. And that's in that prayer vigil chapel, there is also 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, people's names held in prayer. It never breaks. The cycle never breaks. A continuous vigil since the beginning of Silent Unity, which some 100 years or more. So if you put a prayer request in here, for example, if you write it on your connection card or in the box, then we pray for it here. Your name goes there. Your name is held in this very sacred place that has been prayed over for well over 100 years for 24 hours a day, for 30 days. That's a light that shines in our world. That's a center of light. That's a beacon for people all over the world, not just Unity folks. In fact, the largest population that calls are people that are Catholic or Baptist or that name other religions. So there is that kind of center of light that might for us be mostly virtual, unless we make a pilgrimage to Mecca at Unity Village and experience it in person. But otherwise, it may be something you keep in mind as a center of light that guides your way through the path of life here. It also may be that there are beautiful places or places in our community that you might visit on occasion that have that experience of light, but they may not be like your day-to-day place. One of those places is something I just recently discovered myself for the first time. Some of you know the Palace of Fine Arts in San Francisco. And this place was built to be temporary, but the people fell so in love with the beauty and the light of it that they took down the temporary building and rebuilt it to be permanent. Have you all been to the Palace of Fine Arts? Oh, yeah, a lot of you have. It's so gorgeous, isn't it? So, I mean, it was like transported to another country. I got there, I was like, wow, I had no idea this is what I was going to experience here. And so these places of light, the sort of beacons around, right? These places that we might know of that are in our vicinity. We may not go there a lot. It might be a place that we go on occasion or a cultural center, but it's still a place of community. So I went there with Brenly, my partner, and we were going for a concert with a light being, Sanatam Kaur. I don't know if those of you have heard of Sanatam Kaur. She leads sacred chants. And so it was 2.5 hours of bliss, of chanting, you know, in this space with all kinds of amazing beings and lifting up the vibration. And about, I don't know, well into it, an hour and 45 minutes or so into it, she invited all of us to stand together and chant love. And then we did that for, you know, imagine people you've never met before, your brothers and sisters, universal brothers and sisters, everybody's holding hands. And then chanting love for a long time, and then just standing in silence. That's a center of light. Even if it's a pop-up center of light, it's that kind of beaming. Would you like to try that?
Yeah.
Let's do it. Oh, look, we have musicians willing and ready. We have everything we need. So if you'd like to hold a hand, if you don't want to, you can simply put your hands on your heart. And our musicians will guide us. I think there's two parts to the love chant.
Yeah, two parts. The first part goes like this. Love, 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 love. Love, 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 love. Love, 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 love. Love, 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 love. Keep that going.
So it is. So we are. I love that the only sound we can hear in that silence is Mario kissing his caregiver's hand. Imagine if we did that out in the world. You know how those spontaneous dances that happen?
Flash mob.
Flash mob, thank you. I couldn't think of the name. Flash love. I'm thinking we should just go to like Civic Park, Todos Santos, our own town squares around, and do flash love. What do you think?
Nice.
All right, we just have to set a date, let everybody know. Okay. Feels good, doesn't it? Just to realize who we are, why we're here, to remember that, to hold each other's hands. There are no words, really. I'm just adding words to the experience, so. You know the old adage, don't say anything if you can't add to the silence. So there are light beings like all of you in this world that are lighting it up wherever you go. And there are centers of light, the places in your life that you go to recharge your battery, so to speak, so that you can then go back out and light up the world again. And so my encouragement to you this week is to consider where those centers of light are for you and to make a renewed commitment to be a part, to come and to absorb the light, to let yourself be refilled, and to help that those places shine up their lights. So contribute in whatever ways you can so that that place can continue to be a place that shines the light for all. So these light beings that we all are, there are also some people out there that have really found their niche, like Sanat Amkar, who, you know, is bringing these beautiful chants to the world and really lighting up the corners of the planet with that. Another light being that is kind of in our vicinity right now is Ida Risi Alit, who is the High Priestess of Bali. Some of you got to meet her last year. A year ago in May, she came here and did her water blessing and meditation and chants. She's a really, a high vibrational being. I think of her as really embodying the divine feminine in many ways. And so for those of you who don't know her story, she, at a young age, had an experience where she died, completely died. I mean, the family was grieving and she was gone. Meanwhile, while she was checked out of her body, she was having all kinds of visions and experiences. When she came back in, she knew mantras and mudras and scriptures and things that she had never been taught. And so the priests in Bali kind of didn't know what to do with her, really, in a way, because in many ways she was beyond their understanding. So they started to put her through a lot of arduous tests, but she passed everything with flying colors. I mean, at one point they put her out in the jungle somewhere where there was like a particular temples that you would have no way of knowing how to like get in or how to do whatever, and she knew what to do. So when she was 21, she was ordained the High Priestess of Bali. She's the only female and the youngest ever priest or priestess to be ordained. Last year was her first trip to bring the traditional Balinese ceremony around the world, and she came to North America and she came here to our place. And she happens to be in San Francisco for other business. And her manager said, if you could do a blessing one place, where would you like to go? And she said, Unity of Walnut Creek. So she's coming November 7th once again. Yeah. So this, the beauty of what comes, you know, is when we are shiny centers of light, when we keep our lights clean, if you will, you know, I think of like times I've driven around in my car and thought there was something wrong with my headlights, only to get a car wash and find out, no, they were just dirty. It's kind of the same thing. I mean, Ida Risi Alit's blessing is a water blessing. It's a purification. It's a letting go. It's a washing away of what stands in the way. So that's her unique blessing to the world, really the Balinese traditional unique blessing is with water. It's that release. So once again, we get the opportunity to release whatever doesn't work for us anymore, to let go of in the presence of those mudras and mantras and chants and in that experience, and also the water blessing, that we get to experience that individually, but also collectively. I mean, I don't take it lightly that she wants to come here, because for whatever reasons, she's guided here, attracted here, she felt welcome here, and much more, I believe. Always much more is going on, right? So what a gift it is that we get to be a center of light and attract light beings that lead us as light beings ourselves to greater light, to brighten our lights, to brighten our lights as a community, but also to brighten our lights individually. So this is really what we are about, you know, and as we speak of all this light today, I would be remiss to only talk about light and not talk about the darkness, because the light and the dark is our wholeness. It is because of the dark that we know what light is. It is out of the dark that comes all alive. You know, in the Genesis story, it is across the face of the waters of the deep, and then let there be light, and there was light, right? And so it's out of that dark womb that we come into the world. And so we can't forget that piece of it because it is a part of the wholeness that we are. If we were only to affirm and continue to stay on the light beam aspect of things, there would be a time and a place where it wouldn't feel real. Because we have come into this world, we have been birthed into a world of contrast on purpose. We are in a place of duality to remember our oneness. And so it is because of that duality, in that contrast, in that sense of dark and light and all the other opposites that go with that yin-yang kind of experience, that is how we grow. That is how we know the light. That is how we know ourselves. So it's in a similar kind of creation story in the North Pacific. The Haida people and other First Nations people tell the story of how out of the dark waters came the clam, and then it was inside the clam that the first humans were. And on top of that clam stood Raven, pecking and helping the clam shell open up so the people could come free. This is a piece of art by Bill Reed. He's a Haida man who actually at that point in his career had Parkinson's disease. And so other First Nations people came to help him carve it. It took 10 years. And those are the people, of course, coming into the world for the first time through the clamshell. It's really beautiful. There's a few different things about it that are significant. One is it sits, you see the rings around it. The rings are like pebbles. And the idea is like a pebble that drops in the water and the ripples come out, right? So that's the creation, right? And then the ripples of creation, the ripples of humanity, the ripples of coming to know ourselves as light and dark, as whole. And specifically, Bill Reed wanted this to be in this particular place. The museum is the Museum of Anthropology at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. I just happened to be at this place once, 30 years ago, and it just really, really struck me, and I had kind of forgotten about it, and then Mark Nepo talked about it in the book, and so I was like, oh yeah, I remember that really amazing experience of being in this place. So the place used to be a World War II fort, and Bill Reed wanted the sculpture exactly where it is because that's where the gun turret was of this fort. So that, if you know, a gun turret is a place where the weapons are shot from. So it's like the centering place where the weapons are held. And so it's in that place and that center of a place that symbolized violence and darkness and war that he wanted that piece to sit. And above it, not unlike our cupola, once again, this kind of skylight of light streaming down. And so it is with that kind of light and darkness that we come into this world. And that we are meant to move through the world. A lot of times, birds like Raven, or that's very significant for many Native American peoples, or maybe even Condor or some of the others, they get kind of a bad rap sometimes, you know? But yet, Raven is the bird of magic. It is the bird of that's comfortable with the darkness. In fact, Ted Andrews says in Animal Speak, Raven teaches us how to go into the dark and to bring forth the light. With each trip in, we develop the ability to bring more light out. So Raven is this magical bird that is helping humans, in this piece, come into the world. And it is our ability then to be able to go into the dark to bring forth more light. It is our ability to befriend, in a way, the dark that allows us to bring forth more light. So wherever in our lives we might think we're having dark times, we can recognize the fact that that means that there is an opportunity for us to reach in, to go in further, and to bring forth more light than has ever been before. So where I think a lot of times we get in these sort of downward spirals of how awful things are, or how dark things are, or I never thought, or who could believe, or oh my, lions and tigers and bears of whatever kind we name, right? But if instead we'd recognize the fact, oh no, this is exactly where I'm supposed to be at exactly this right time. And that darkness, whatever we name it to be, is a part of the breaking forth of the light of day. That darkness that we come up against is not something to push away, but to move toward, in fact, further into, so we can reach for the light and bring it forth out of the dark. And so being a center of light means that we ourselves as light beings individually are willing to be that within our own personal lives, but also as a community, as a center of light, that we are willing to recognize that, yes, there is darkness, but it's okay. And it's not something to be not taken seriously, but it's something to recognize as a birthing place. It is a womb, not a tomb. It is a place of rebirth, of reawakening, of new possibility that we come forth from. And look at the people in the clamshell. I don't know if you noticed, but some of them look like they're distressed, and some of them look eager, and some of them look like I'd rather go back in that shell and hide. And you may be at any one of those places at any given time, right? I'd rather put the covers up over my head and get back in the shell, or maybe I'll peek out. Or maybe I'll put them down and I'll jump up and I'll get ready for my day and recognize that where there is darkness, I will bring light. And I will not be afraid of that darkness. Yes? Yeah. Because the truth is we are our world is that clamshell and we are a part raven and we have friends. You know, like the ravens and the other beings in our world that are conspiring with us to bring forth more light. So it's really important that we find our centers of light so we can regroup, right? We can come back together here. We can feel ourselves encouraged and inspired, and we can say, what is mine to do to make sure this light stays really shiny? What's mine to do to make sure that things stay really clear and clean here within myself and within this place, whatever those places are, including ours. And so that feels to me like our key charges here, to identify and name our centers of light, and then to just ask ourselves, what is mine to do here at this center of light? What is mine to do here to clean and to cleanse and to renew and to uphold and to beam ever more brightly? And when darkness comes, to be willing to say, I am not afraid, or even if I am afraid, I walk into that dark knowing I'm like Raven bringing forth more light and more co-creation and more possibility and more opportunity. Mark Nepo said that it is the call of community to facilitate birth in every way possible and to help each other on our way once we're here. That's what we do when, as a center of light, we become more bright so that more people feel the light pull them and they find then a place of community and encouragement and inspiration and support and everything else that they might get, spiritual growth. So for us, it's about engaging in our centers of light, identifying them, naming them, engaging fully in them so that we can beam our lights as brightly as we possibly can. Let's know this together. Let's affirm it together. Let's speak it together. And let's carry that love and light out into the world. Together, I engage with my centers of light and brighten my own. And so it is.